are negligible. Peanuts, high in sucrose, all preserves except apple butter. Now, what they're probably trying to tell you in this material is, when it's related to some of the sucrose and carbohydrates in peanut butter, it is not high. You can get low to moderate based upon the kind that you buy. But I think the biggest insulting thing, I'll check on that. It may very well be that you're right, that peanut butter is bad. And are any of you else, do many of you feel that peanut butter is high in sucrose? You sure it's not the jelly? I'll have to check on that. Because the Texas, Tom DiOrio published a manual on nutrition, and I think he has peanut butter also as a component. What, were there any other areas that you found ineffective in the film? In terms of consistency of sucrose?
See that blonde over there, just over both things. Yeah, just like peanut burger, we'll have your...
Fluoridated
toothpaste. See the rest of it, just the face.
Well, you know, we ought to talk about fluoridated toothpaste, and then we'll stop for coffee break. If you're having an effective program to remove plaque effectively, patients should not use any toothpaste at all during the training program. And patients should be told not to use any toothpaste while they are going through the plaque control procedures. However, once the plaque has been removed, I know there's a conflict when I read to you about the shelf life of certain toothpaste. They didn't say which toothpaste they were in the study. But based upon the evidence that we have, fresh sodium fluoride toothpaste do give you some kind of daily effect. And that's about the only value that the fluoride toothpaste can provide. Yes, sir. When one is in an area of fluoridated water, the maximum amount that they've been able to document over a 25-year study with all the samples, Michigan and upper New York State, they get caries reduction 45 to 60%. So using the fluoride mouthwash or using the acidulated fluoride gives you that additional fluoride protection where kids are abusive in their plaque control. So I don't know of any study that says that in a fluoridated area, you should use fluoridated toothpaste, because in our area, we have fluoridated water and they're using fluoridated toothpaste. If you have any doubts about the value of fluoridated water, you can read the studies by Abe Cohen in Philadelphia, City of Philadelphia, and their school program has precipitously reduced the amount of caries. Any other questions? Yes, sir. This disease, and you've learned now how to help them detect the disease and control the disease themselves. Yes, ma'am. I would start a child on a controlled program for themselves around the sixth grade level based upon their digital dexterity. Before that, the package program for a patient's family. Now, I've heard several dentists here say to me, I'm not so surprised. We do this in our office. We take a family in. So there are men in this community who are now taking entire families for a modest fee. I think the fee he charged was inadequate. I think that, you know, the biggest problem with this program is you don't think you're delivering a service. And if you don't think you're delivering a service, it's not worth much. And I can tell you that you are probably delivering the best service that you've ever delivered to this patient to protect their investment of anything they've ever spent. And when you get to feel this way, and your staff feels this way, you'll take the attitude that you take now about radiographs. You don't pussyfoot around with radiographs. You're not anxious about radiographs. We're going to take x-rays. That's it. No. May I take x-rays? You used to do that. You don't do that any longer. The same thing applies with the patient. And I can tell you it is so easy that you're going to be amazed. I'll give you an example. I I spoke in Jamaica in the middle of November to many, in fact, Barry Klassman was in Jamaica at the time, so I know you Delawareans were, is that how you say it? You're Delawareans, Delaware? I'm Pennsylvania. Delawareans? Always a tough kind of crowd. Anyhow, at this time, someone took this program from St. Louis. There are people at the session, my presentation, which is Chicago, St. Louis. And he got turned on. I was giving a course at Penn on November the 19th and 20th. I got back from Jamaica on the 16th. He was in his office Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Calls me up Thursday night. Friday morning, the program starts. The program's oversubscribed. And he says, Herm, I'm calling you from St. Louis to tell you that I've got to send two girls up to take this course. I'm in desperate trouble. What's the matter? I came back and I presented the control program. I don't even know how to do it totally to my patients. I have 50 people waiting to go under control and I can't deliver the goods. So I tell you that I've given you an awful lot of information. You've got to go out and search this out yourself and work it out in a one-to-one relationship with your staff, and you'll be surprised that the worst guy, the toughest person in this group, is the dentist to come to grips with the fact that he has a practice that's going to be preventively oriented. I hope I haven't offended anyone. That's not my intent. I'm here to help, and it's a sincere effort on my part to present this two-day program in a day, and I hope that I've given you enough to go home with. I am not finished yet. I want to tell you about the five-day program and the scoring and the reinforcements. Yes, any question? Yes, sir. I would say that in my practice, okay, 100% of the people who accept treatment, all phases of treatment, go through the program. When they hear this, they want the treatment. In fact, some of them go through the control program and move away to another area to be treated because they're just not going to be available. Now, the amount of patients that accept radiographs from you in your practice would be the number of patients that will accept preventive dentistry from you. And there are some people who come into your practice who are belligerent, who are difficult to manage. The problem with us as dentists is that we're inadequately prepared to understand human behavior. That not every patient is the same kind of patient, and not every patient is going to fall in the same category, and not every patient is going to be submissive. And there are basically four categories of people. The first category of people that you see, and this is the predominant number of people you see, is the passive submissive patient. You're the doctor. I'll come here. You fix me up. I'll come back when I need you again. I'll do whatever you say, doctor. The second type of patient is the patient who has a greater aspiration level. They look at the doctor with the doctor having has a special medicine, awe-inspiring, aspiration, admiring approach, more than, but much more cooperative type of patient. The third type of patient is a patient in the engineering category. They'll say to you, I'm as smart as you are, buddy. And the only reason I'm coming to you is you got the tools. And that's socially acceptable. And I could do everything you do and maybe better. The only reason you got the equipment, I'm coming, that's the usual thing to do. Okay? That's the third kind of guy. And that guy is a guy who'll come into a consultation and question you and ask you like you ask me about the peanut butter, you know? Because one guy said it, 14 guys jumped up on him. Okay? I'll find out about it, don't worry. You can bet, Dad. County Morris. Cell phone, County Morris. Telephone. You just won the New Jersey sweepstakes. 50,000. And the fourth type of person is the type of person you're asking. That's the aggressive person. Who doesn't want you to run your practice your way because he thinks you know you want to run it a certain way, and he's going to show you that he's going to give you a hard time. I have those patients, you all have this kind. Let me give you an example. How you win a patient over. If you take the attitude that everyone is going to go through the control program when you say so, you're going to bomb a lot of people. Because you don't understand, when I say you, I don't either always understand people. Or I'm under pressure because of emergencies. I may not hit that patient off right, okay? Now let's talk about the outright belligerent, aggressive person, okay? Patient sitting in a chair, you walk in, they're ready to get out. Okay? Their feet are dangling. Examine me, tell me how much it is I want to go. I mean, this kind of patient. Now, for you to say to this patient, you have to do thus, thus, and thus, when he said, look, I've got a tooth that I want to fix, and if you'll be submissive to me, then I'll listen to you. Okay? And if you back up, which you can, and say, I don't run my practice that way. Every patient has to have a prophylaxis, full set of x-ray, study models, consultation before you. You do that routine, right? Same routine. This guy will not be in your practice. This same aggressive person can be molded into a very, very good dental patient. If you give him an opportunity to say what he wants to say, and you listen to what he has to say. I have a typical example of this about 2 weeks ago, where a referring dentist had this guy bugging him, and this guy never refers a patient to me for examine one tooth. He says, please examine the patient, give me a report. I get a note, please examine one tooth. I already know what kind of patient this is. The patient sits in the chair and said, I'm a busy guy. I should be in Detroit right now. There are 35 people in Detroit waiting for me, and I'm here. I says, go. No. Look at this one tooth, okay? I mean, you have the same patient. And I said, okay, I'll examine this one tooth. I got on the phone, and I gave him the options about this one tooth. And I said, let me show you something. I took a black light, my light, see? Stained him. I took him, I said, look at this material under the microscope. I said, these are your choices for this tooth. He got hit in a football accident, and he had severe bone loss on the palate, deep pockets on the palate, palatal ledge, and he tells the dentist he wants a curettage. So the dentist curettes it, and he gets periodontal abscesses repeatedly. Now the dentist says, Herman, we'll take one tooth. I did the periodontal screening exam I told you about. I gave the girl the data, and I answered his question. I said, you have other problems in your mouth, but I know how you feel about this mouth. You've been running to office, and you haven't got this solved. I'll solve this for you. I was submissive. And I said, you have these choices. The choice would be for me to curette this area and teach you plaque control. Get it? Because all the curettage in the world won't get rid of this. Come here, I want to show you something. Okay, different approach than I said to you today. He said, what is that? I said, these are bacterial organisms, the whole story I've been spending the day on. He says, I don't want that in my mouth. I said, I can't help you though. He said, what do you mean you can't help me? I took off time to repeat the whole Detroit story. I said, you can't get educated on the run. Go to Detroit with your disease. Okay? Not my disease, his disease. You go to Detroit with your disease, and when you're ready, I'm ready. And if you would like me to do a lot of things for you, because you're a busier guy than the average person I see, we'll do the scaling and the curettage, and then you have the option of having the bacteria form the next day, or we'll start the scaling and the curettage, and you'll be trained. And that training won't be effective unless you come back. Would you know that he changed his whole mind about this? He went to Detroit. He's got the whole program scheduled. So you can be antagonistic. There's a lot that we have to learn about human relations. And you can all say to me, hey, how do you motivate? It isn't that simple. It's patient understanding, giving a patient an opportunity to say what he wants to say and listen to the patient, and having a program of gestalt and know what your objectives are, and make the program fit the patient. Suppose this belligerent guy, I taught him a little bit, and then I showed him under the microscope that he was better. And then he knew how to, he's a very health-oriented guy, incidentally. But he's a tough, aggressive guy, and he doesn't have time to waste for himself either. I said, you're going to lose this tooth. Make up your mind. And would you know that he set up appointments for the curettage and the whole control program and a full periodontal examination? Now, in answer to your question, it is not percentages. I can tell you a better, that percentage is a high one, okay? You should say to me, okay, big shot, how many of your patients remain under control? People were saying to me here earlier, you have a control program? It's great after 5 days. You see them in 4 months? Oh, what a mess. 4 months is a mess. If you knew and recognized and incorporated the things I said to you this morning about reinforcement, a total program, what the program is, how you set up this program, there are no stopgaps in this for reinforcement. We don't have everyone under control, but they know they should be, and they know that they're flunking, and we score them. And I want to tell you, we don't use the Navy scoring index. The Navy scoring index is a scoring technique of picking 6 teeth in the mouth and measuring plaque and scoring it, giving a numerical value. Had a patient had a numerical value of 18 and give a percentage of that 18, and they get less than 78% or 87%, they bomb. That's fine as motivation. But we're dealing with a very awesome responsibility here. We're saying to all of our patients who have been loyal to us for the years, the patients who pay you your rent, the patients who come back to you on regular routine periodontal maintenance and preventive maintenance, and they say to you, doctor, I trust you, and I know I trust you, and I love you, and please don't let me down. And they're saying, deliver the goods. And I can tell you that we're undertaking a very awesome responsibility. Aside from trying to get you motivated, dentistry is in a very difficult position, because if you say you're going to deliver it, you better know whether your patients are under control. You better know whether these pockets are eliminated. You better know what your patient's scores are. So it's easy to motivate the staff, but you should know what this responsibility is, and it's not difficult when you know the state of your patient by means of scoring. Now, we score the patient 0 if they have no plaque. Now, we don't use the erythrocin dye for the scoring technique. You know why. If you use the erythrocin dye for the scoring technique, if a patient went through the plaque control program effectively 8 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock, I've got better. And an uninitiated auxiliary who is in a plaque control program would need instructions to say, Mary, this is not plaque. And she said, I can't tell. And it's very difficult to tell. Early pellet. With the plaque-like system, you don't have to get involved like that. It scores plaque. It doesn't score pellet. So when our patients come to our hygienist, the hygienist scores them. And the first thing she does is give them the 4 drops, they irrigate their mouth, and then she scores them. And she takes out a dental chart, and we have a scoring chart. And the scoring chart has 12 oral cavity recording areas. And we score their progress 12 times in longitudinal basis. And this hygienist knows if they're effective. And we're not scoring 6 teeth, we're scoring 28 teeth if there are 28 teeth. Every surface of every tooth. And I only care about the gingival area, because that's where the toxicity is. Sure, caries are the problem, and you have to keep that in mind. So you should score the labial surface, the proximal surface, that gives you 3, the lingual surface is 4, the occlusal is 5. If our patients score more than 4 surfaces, they don't get a 1. And that's a darn rigid scoring technique. Try it. You'll like it. You don't know, and look, you know, I gotta be careful about that. I sound condescending, and I don't mean that. I should use the word one does not know, because I am in with you. I hope I identify with you. I practice general dentistry. When I say you don't know, I mean that if you have not been through a plaque control program, if you don't score yourself, then you don't know. The
people that came and took this course at Penn did not know. They thought they knew, but they were not scoring as rigidly as they should score to motivate and really collect data. We score patients zero if they have no plaque, one if they have four surfaces of plaque, 2A if they have more than four surfaces of plaque. Two if they have more surfaces of plaque. 2A is 5 to 10. 2B, it's a very simple scoring technique. 2B is 10 to 15, and 2C is 15 or more surfaces of plaque. If I come into the girl, she says to me, the patient is 2A5.
That's it.
Or she says 2A, I know it's between 5 and 10. And then I'll say to the patient, you know, Mrs. Smith, I'm awfully sorry. I think that somewhere along the line, I've let you down. I can't make you healthy unless you're willing to become healthy. You have no idea what that means to me. If you say you're diseased, psychologically they say to themselves, boy, dummy, that's why I'm here. But if you say you're not healthy, they're saying, that's my job. I'm not healthy. I want to be healthy. How can I be healthy? And I can assure you that simple techniques like this, and I hope to give you more, make these patients realize, back at my consultation, it's a consultation to tell them it's their responsibility. It's reinforced the control program, reinforced with the hygienist. And we score them 2 A's. We score them 2 B's. And we also score them 3's. Don't care about themselves, we can't invest any time with them. True, they can come to our office, but they must know that they have disease existent in the mouth, they're not healthy, and there's going to be a day of reckoning. And for those of you who are doing restorative dentistry, you ought to know that about your people. Because this gives you an excellent opportunity to make them realize that they have to participate. And it's uncanny, that when I was gathering the data to answer your question, you know, how many people do you have? That's why I started the scoring technique. And the byproduct of the scoring technique is a psychological response of human behavior among American people, probably more people in the world. No one wants to be a failure. There's a tremendous aspiration level. And you tell them, in essence, they're not scoring well. The achievement aspiration that occurs with people and their attitudinal change about the fact that they're not healthy is amazing. And we have had patients change their whole scoring attitude. We've had people who were threes become ones. And we give them rewards. The patient's a zero, we give them a rose. Now that kind of sounds kind of silly. It does, doesn't it? I told my wife I was going to give them a rose as a reward, because that was an achievement of excellence. And it's a rose that comes from Portland, Oregon, from the Chamber of Commerce in Oregon. Texas puts out the yellow rose, Oregon puts out the red rose. And then we give the ones a happy tooth. That's kind of silly. For an adult specialist in periodontics to talk to adults about mature things. And I told this to my wife, and she said, you know, I know you're very enthusiastic about prevention. Aren't you being carried away a little? And I said, that may be so, but I think that there should be some way of rewarding the people, okay? Let me tell you a byproduct of this. You go to a bridge game, gal wearing a rose. Comments like, oh, you got a rose. You really weren't a zero. He knows you, okay? I tell you that I'm the talk of the community. I really am. Now, what does this do? It builds up tremendous rapport with people. I have people who deserve roses. I don't want a rose. I want a happy tooth.
An adult executive walking a happy 92 doesn't have ridiculous.
The doctor gives the roses out. A hygienist can give the happy teeth the number ones out. And you'd be amazed at the conversations that go on in the families about the husband and wife, about their dental health. And they say, what's that rose? And they say, my mouth is healthy. How is yours? It's amazing psychologically how this builds a practice, how this identifies for you what the patient can do. So now you know the scoring technique. You now know the reinforcing technique. In the balance of the time, let me show you how we run through a... Any question? The two is anyone beyond... I got tangled in that. Anyone beyond four surfaces is a two. And we subdivide two into 2A, 2B, and 2C. 5 to 10 is 2A, 10 to 15 is 2B, and 10 to 15 on is 2C. Now, what you can say to me is, what data do you have? Do you know that when one talks about chronic diseases, we're talking about a chronic inflammatory disease, carries a chronic infectious disease. Do you know that when you talk about chronic diseases in the medical specialties, like alcoholism, narcotics addiction, obesity, arteriosclerosis, coronary artery disease. What percentage of the people do you think that go under programs of prevention and these programs sustain them? Now, we're talking about, they're life-endangering diseases, and I'm not talking about life-endangering disease. People don't need their teeth. There's a social stigma related to aesthetic appeal, love, affection, appearance, personal dignity relates to teeth. You can live without teeth. What is the percentage of people who fail in these medical-oriented diseases? You'll be shocked to know. Anybody want to take a stab? 30% succeed or fail. That's not high enough. 90% of the people fail. These are not my figures, okay? Whoever, you know, not my figures. Okay? I mean, I'm quoting something. I'm quoting you are behavioral scientists' data. You can ask them routinely. They'll tell you in these areas. Psychiatrists will tell you they'll fail 90%. How can we in dentistry then expect to introduce a program to be successful? And we are successful, and we can. Difference is, we're willing to invest the time in training these people. Now, this disease control program that I gave you numbers about before that sound very surreptitious, oh, he's talking about days. There's a reason for this. You have people who are going to make motor skill changes. You're going to have people learning things like, how do you brush your teeth? How do you floss? And you just don't give this kind of training to a patient in 5 minutes. It takes a long time to learn how to floss. It takes a long time as an inexperienced person to learn where plaque is and where the inaccessible areas of plaque are. And when you say you're investing the time and that you care and you concern yourself about their dental health, and then your willingness to make them healthy by investing 5 hours, they say, you know, this is unusual. Here is someone who is in the medical profession. You don't hear much about preventive medicine. Very little about preventive medicine. Dentistry is ahead of medicine. Dentistry is evolving time. Dentistry is oriented behavioral sciences in this regard. We have a lot to learn, but we've got a good start. And when you spend, we spend an hour on a patient. They get 5 hours of training, and then we wean them, and we don't see them for a week. They come in for a week later for a disease control evaluation, and then if they're successful, we see them in a month. So our whole control program as a package is 7 visits. Now with children, you should have these 7 visits, but they should be shorter. Now this program also has certain monitoring aspects to it, and I'd like to show you some of the slides to give you this idea about how this is monitored. Please ask me any of the questions that I may not have answered for you because we just have a half an hour's time remaining. Let me tell you, one of the other things that make patients know we care is that we document all our cases. I wouldn't be able to have this documented material to show you otherwise. And we take
slides of the patient before they go through the disease control program. They do nothing at home during the training program. And in 5 days, we can show them negative microscopic pictures. And the bleeding will stop. The bleeding exists. The odor disappears. Change the current. And they know they've helped themselves without us. So we document our cases. Pre-disease control, post-disease control, post-scaling and curettage. The patient will start the disease control program, and in this disease control program, there are several things that they will go through. And I'd like to, because of expediency, read to you what we do in a control program. The patient will see at the initial examination visit the film strip I showed you earlier. And the doctor will introduce the program, the patient accepts that. And then the patient is given some educational literature from the first visit to the second visit, along with the dietary list, dietary intake sheet that they keep a list of. First visit, you see the photographs being taken, and then the disease control therapist finds out what the patient knows. They interchange ideas. And when the level of understanding is understood, the patient will see a film strip that is not a single-phase theme like you see. Our film strip is a total package that tells them all of their involvement, everything that they're going to see. So they see that film strip, and after they've seen the film strip, the disease control therapist gives them a kit, and you'll see the kit in this program. And the kit is designed in its simplest form to give them what they need. They will get unwaxed floss. They will get wax floss if we think they need it. They will get them the Floxite magnifying mirror. They will be given a subgum toothbrush, a perio aid, and a patient educational booklet. And then we have a mannequin that the disease control therapist demonstrates flossing on. The problem with teaching patients is that you are invading their privacy by putting your fingers in their mouths, and they don't like to have a stranger do this until they become comfortable. And if you teach them about dental flossing on a mannequin, and then you ask them to demonstrate it in their mouth, that barrier is overcome because they develop an empathy with you. So we use a mannequin, we use their own study models to show them tilted teeth, angulations that they will not remove plaque with because of the angulation of teeth, so they use their own study models, and we demonstrate on the model, the dental disease therapist shows them how to use flossing. In the movie, you saw flossing used in a certain way. We slide the floss under the contact and scrape down, and they're taught flossing for the first visit. And the patient finishes the flossing in their mouth the first visit. And that may be all we do at the first visit. The second visit, they review the flossing. They're instructed in brushing, and we use the modified Bass technique of brushing. We're going to show you this in the material. And then they may be introduced to the perio aid. The third visit, the patient stained in the beginning with the erythrocin dye. That's the working tool. They use a Floxite magnifying mirror, and the patient demonstrates to the therapist the removal of floss, the plaque removal with brushing, and corrections are made with the perio aid. Now, so far, for 3 days, the patient has used the disclosing solution in the beginning. And we score them with the plaque light at the end so they can see how effective they are. The fourth day, no stain. They're there, they're told not to do anything at home. They go through the whole control program in the office without any guidance. She's there supervising, no disclosing at all. After she's finished, she will then use the erythrocin disclosing because she wants them to know that plaque can be remaining, or pellicle can be remaining, and she wants to make the distinction because she's going to superimpose on that the plaque light. The fifth day. On the fourth day, she may take a microscopic
slide to say to them, now, do you remember the first slide we showed you all these wiggly bugs? Now you got these little dots. These dots are early plaque formation, which means you're doing a pretty good job, but we want you to be able to remove the plaque thoroughly on a daily basis. So we're now scoring them on the microscope. And on the fifth day, we tell them to go through the entire disease control program at home, under their own lighting, under their own illumination, with their own kit, with their own devices. Use a disclosant solution before they come in, just before they come in. Not in the morning for a 5 o'clock appointment, just before they come in. There's some patients who work and can't do that. They come to our office, we put them in a room, we let them go through the whole program. That's not as good because they're not going in their own environment. We'll let them do it once and we say, look, you're doing okay, but the next time you've got to go in your own bathroom because we want to see if your environment will enable you to see adequately. And you'd be amazed, half of them can't see at home. And the fifth day when they come in for the control program, they are stained immediately, and then a microscopic smear is made. If they score well, they're through the program. Okay? If they score well, and they're through the program, we reward them. And the reward is something like this. After they're finished, they get a letter from the disease control therapist that says, the American Flossing Society is an organization dedicated to the daily removal of germs from the areas between the teeth, both upper and lower. This is a letter the patient gets. Membership is by invitation only. Your name has been submitted by a member as being a likely candidate for membership. There are no dues and no meetings. All you have to do is become a member is to floss between your teeth each day and to remove the germs, both upper and lower teeth. Encloses a sticker to place at the bottom of your bathroom mirror to remind you to keep your membership current. This sticker has a self-adhesive back. No moistening is needed. This sticker should be placed on your bathroom mirror for the purpose of reminding you to floss. It should not be used solely as a status symbol to impress your visitors in your home. Then it's signed very sincerely. You would probably have the Southern Division of the Atlantic Division of the Flossing Society. And you want to know something? Every little bit of effort that we make in this concern helps. Now, this is the fifth day. They're now discharged for a week. And they come back for a disease control evaluation, and we use the term disease control evaluation, which tells them you're going to stain your teeth at home, and you're going to go through your plaque control program. It's a short visit. We surely are interested in you, and we want to evaluate the state of your health and your capability of plaque control. And at the fifth visit, they're okay. And at the 1 week visit, you're back. So the patient goes through the control program. You know now what happens in 5 days. And they see this film strip. And the film strip is a total concept film strip. And here's the disease control therapist answering some question for the patient that wasn't clarified. She could stop it at a particular point in the film strip. And here's our kit. Now the disease control kit you see here, purposely I put in dental tape. Purposely I put in stimulants so that I could provoke some questions. As a periodontist, you would expect me to emphasize a great deal about gingival stimulation. Okay? I can safely say that we spend our major emphasis and major effort in plaque removal. And in selective cases do we tell patients to use gingival stimulation. There's a certain configuration of root form and amount of bone loss and gingival attachment that requires some stimulation, particularly in younger people more than in older people. And we really don't invest a great deal of time in stimulation. Our disease control booklet describes stimulation. It's an encyclopedia that tells you all the things you have to do when it comes to plaque control and dental management. So we don't use the stimulants. Stimulants are not as good as a perioate for cleaning tooth structure. They're too friable and they'll break. Question you may ask is about dental floss and dental tape. When you have this patient with a lot of calculus, and I'm interested in not frustrating them, we'll start them out with wax floss so they don't get hung up on all these areas.
And when their mouth is clean, then we wean them into the unwaxed floss and tell them if you're going to give yourself a fluoride therapy treatment, you don't want to have wax on your teeth. And then if you want to get an evaluation without looking in the mirror, your teeth will sound squeaky clean as you scrape the plaque off the teeth. As you slide down the buccal incline, the lingual incline, you'll hear a squeaky clean sound. You don't get that with the wax floss. But during the initial phases, this is a very important addenda. Otherwise, many people get frustrated and they abandon the program, and I'm not hung up on unwaxed floss. I know it'll do, and I know what the other will do. You might be interested in knowing in a study in California showed that wax floss and unwaxed floss were equally effective at removing plaque, but just wanted to make as much of the squeaky noise. I just wanted to point out to you, this is the Floxite attachment we give every patient. The Floxite attachment enables you to look inside the mouth and see what's going on. Here's a patient using the disclosure solution that I described to you and gave you the formula for. And this is out of focus. And now the examination by the disease control therapist starts, and it's a one-to-one problem-solving situation. The disease control therapist has to be low-key, very patient, understanding, kind. A high-pressured guy cannot do a disease control therapy. He'll turn the people off. The worst person to do preventive instruction is the doctor. That's what I've been told. This has been reinforced by many people. If you're a solo practitioner and you want to get involved with one patient, see if you can perform the service, pick out a patient who falls into the first category, the passive patient, you'll make it. You won't make it so easily on the second and third, because they require too much of your time. So here the program starts. The patient starts, one, to learn where plaque is. Two, by coming in on a daily basis, they know that the plaque forms every 24 hours. And they know that they have to remove it every 24 hours. Now, one of you can say, Dr. Korn, are you sure that it will cause disease if they don't remove the plaque every 24 hours? And my answer is, I'm sure they won't get disease if they don't remove the plaque every 24 hours. But I don't know how long they can go. Howard Lowe says if they go 5 days, they're in trouble. He also says, and I agree with him, if a patient can stand the wrong breath and didn't brush their teeth and didn't go through a plaque control program, I don't think you have to do it. This is between us, inside. I think they could still be healthy every other day. But it'd be a much bigger job to do, much faster if you do it on a daily basis. And this is the Floxite attachment that we can't practice without. For problem solving, working in a patient's mouth, the patient has to have a tool. You here, by your own inability to see inside your mouth, didn't see that much because you didn't have the tools. This dental mirror is better than any dental mirror that you have in your office other than the magnifying mirror or the glass mirrors that we spend $8 for taking intraoral photography that you're seeing. That costs 60-some cents to you. Now, this is the electrified model that we don't give our patients. We give them mailers for. And when they recognize that they're ineffective or they're so involved with prevention, they want a better tool, this is the greatest device. Now, this is the Vividont model. It doesn't have screwed-in teeth. It has a rubber gasket and gives them the elasticity of the periodontal ligament. And this is the model that the disease control therapist demonstrates flossing in the mouth with. And then the patient practices in the mouth and corrections are made. So you need the tools. Now here's a close-up of the model. Let me go to the next cartridge, please. That will probably be A prime. Lower radiant corner is the number. G-E-N-T-A-L-E-Z. It's the greatest adjunctive model. Get the tools for your girls. They'll love you for it. And they'll do a great job. They can't be effective when they're struggling without the right materials. It comes on. Did you see the articulator affair? It comes with its own stand and articulator, and it really is very inexpensive. Now, let me show you about flossing. Someone said, how much? I think about $35. Is that a lot? No, it's inexpensive. It's amazingly inexpensive. I'd like to tell you how dental flossing is effective. You should wrap the dental floss around the first fingers. I know Barkley says wrap around your middle fingers. I'm only offering, I don't really care how much you wrap them. You know, I'm not hung up on that. Just long the floss doesn't hang it. The reason I suggest wrapping the floss around your first fingers, interestingly enough, that little bit of extra quarter of an inch to an half an inch from the length of your middle finger enables a patient to get to the beyond the terminal tooth and wrap the floss around the terminal tooth. It's that little bit of difference that leaves the plaque along the line angles of the teeth. Now what you do to effectively use floss is allow a half an inch of space between your fingers and wiggle the floss through the contact area, and then slide the floss under the gingiva. Now the movie that you saw, it's an excellent movie. And if you wanted to be hypercritical, and you know, it's easy for one guy to be critical of the others. The thing you have to warn patients about is that when they slip the floss down and they scrape, they should slide the floss under the gingiva passively, should cause no injury, and then slip the floss under the gingiva gently. You can't go under the gingiva more than 2 millimeters. Maybe 3 millimeters if you have a steep peak here, but you sure can't get the floss into a 5 millimeter pocket. That's baloney. So you have to know that supragingivally you're cleaning it and marginally you're cleaning it, but you're not cleaning the pockets. And then you push distally. That's why the middle finger is good. Wrap it around the tooth, slide down the buccal incline, and scrape the bone. And then on the opposite side of the same embrasure, slide the floss under the gingiva passively. Don't cut yourself. I'll show you a floss cut injury in a moment. And scrape coronally. If you go back and forth, you won't get the squeaky clean sound. Scrape coronally. Now that's not the way I was taught to use dental floss. But you can be much more effective, much more efficient as you scrape the plaque off coronally, including an entire embrasure. This shows you the floss sliding down the lingual incline. This is the Vividine model. I tell you, our therapist really loves it. And using an unwaxed floss, as you scrape, the many filamented floss spreads and scrapes the plaque out. I might tell you that for some of your patients, you should know that Johnson & Johnson puts out a single filament unwaxed floss. Don't knock it. Because if you use a many filamented floss and you have a smidgen of an irregularity on the tooth, and you start telling patients about perfect restorations and you start replacing them and there are problems involved, there are things that you ought to know about. Like you can have a tooth remain caries-free, disease-free, with iatrogenic problems if you remove the plaque on a daily basis. In other words, if you have an irregular margin, I'm not condoning that. I'm saying that with effective plaque removal, you can carry a patient until you have had an opportunity to replace it. And the floss spreads as you move the floss coronally with a scraping stroke, and you'll hear, it'll sound squeaky, and it sounds clean. Just like when you wash your hair and you get all the grease out of your hair and you rub your fingers through your hair and the hair squeaks, the same idea. And as you move coronally, the pressure is in the coronal movement. Down in the upper teeth and up on the lower. Not seesawing. You can cause notching and cementum if you do very impulsive back and forth stroking. Here's an example of abusive flossing. This patient heard from a newspaper that flossing was a thing to do, mentioned it to her dentist. She got flossed with no instruction, and she developed these floss cuts. And the gingiva is on the enamel with gingival overgrowth in younger people, and the embrasures are small. So you must be careful and warn them not to cut the gingiva. And you can see that within a week, this area responds. When you stop the
Now, this is a disease control booklet that we instruct our patients with. And the booklet is an encyclopedia of plaque control. This booklet we give every patient along with the disease control kit. And this booklet has, the book is divided very nicely in distinct areas. We tell them there are two things you can do in your mouth. You can stimulate your gums and you can remove the plaque from your teeth. And one is one, the purpose of one is thus and so, and the purpose of the other is for another reason. And the nice aspect of this is that we have a prescription blank here. You can X anything you want the patient to use. You might want to use a modified Bass technique, the Bass technique, the PerioAid, dental floss, the flock cycle, whatever you need. We check it for them and they go home and they use this as a patient reference for review. And we tell the patient to bring this booklet in with them because they can make notes if there are any corrections made during the course of the program.